Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Save big money on everything for your next project. Now at Menards. Spring is here, meaning time for outdoor projects. Cabot Australian Timber Oil is perfect for decks, siding, and outdoor furniture while providing maximum penetration, durability, and water repellency. Save big money on Cabot exterior stains to get your staining project started today. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
And welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host there. And I'm joined as ever by my co-host, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
I'm very good, mate. You didn't call me the guru there, and I think I know why. It's because today you're the guru.
Today we're flipping things over.
We're turning the tables, mate. Yeah. Last week was great. The Premier League team of the year. Great combination of ideas. And we absolutely nailed it. Our friend Sam Tai questioned the inclusion of Anthony Robinson, but agreed in general that we'd nailed that team. Might have had a point on Robinson, but I don't think.
I think there's not been particularly a brilliant plethora of.
There's not been no exactly like that. Nobody could have to say there's a standout candidate, so we're fine on that. But this week it's European Team of the Year, and I think you're the man for this job and that I just chime in. You watch 472 games of football every weekend from all over Europe in every single league. So you are the absolute European guru, aren't you?
I'm excited. I'm excited about this team. It's taken me a long, long time to sift through this morning. I had about 12 candidates for every position, but I have, I think, come to a conclusion on what I think this team looks like.
It's impossible to get right because in the Premier League, there's 20 teams. You can discount about half of them straight away of having any players in the team of the year. So you've got 10 teams. You know who's nailed on for places, like we said last week. It's five or six places is straight in. So you've only got five places to really fill. You are looking across six, seven different leagues, also considering potentially how they've gotten in the Europa League or the Champions League. And yeah, you're basically weighing up about 100 teams.
Yeah, there was a lot of candidates today. There's a lot of honourable mentions, but we'll get to it. We'll get to it in part two. We're going to be trying to build a European Team of the Year, excluding the Premier League, of course. So before we do that, I just wanted to, well, actually, to be honest, I wanted to congratulate myself because the bag has survived for a fourth consecutive season. Now, for those of you who are new to the podcast or don't know what the hell I'm on about, the bag is something that goes on across the course of a season, every season, where once a team has won the league, they are put in the bag. Now, the bag has seven spots in it. And I sort of call them relatively early. I think we called some big ones back in sort of November time. I think we called PSV, PSG and Leicester City winning the league before the year was out. I think we called in January that Leverkusen had won the league, that Real Madrid had won the league. And there was a couple of others too. Inter were put in the bag just after Christmas as well. But all seven teams have come through and won their respective divisions. Now, the bag only exists as long as the bag survives. As soon as the bag has a hole in it, it's a useless bag. And therefore, the bag will end. But for a fourth consecutive season, seven teams called, seven teams have won their respective leagues. So I'm absolutely delighted, Dean. I can't tell you enough.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it wouldn't survive this season, mate. I mean, Leicester certainly had a wobble and I thought would go. Sporting was tight. They've done it and they've had some big celebrations, but thanks to Ruben Amorim, you've survived. Leverkusen, even though it looked obvious because they were clearly the best team, it was still a nerve-wracking decision because you were backing
that. 6 points clear at that point.
Yeah, and you were backing that Bayern Munich aren't going to catch him. Oh, it was dodgy this year. But 4 years, I don't think people who are new to this pod will appreciate quite how impressive that is, because you do make early calls on this. I don't like to give you much credit, mate, when it comes to football.
Started off well today. It's gone very nicely.
But I'll hold my hands up when you've done a job well. And when it comes to bag calls, you're the guru, mate. You are. Yeah. You are. This is absolutely sensational bagging. I'm not sure that's a good phrase to use, but that's what we're going with. Good job, mate. 4 years. I didn't think we'd see another year of the bag, but we will go into next season at Ranks FC with the bag in one piece.
Hopefully trying to make it five in a row. Very, very exciting. It's wild. It's wild. Last year, the final day where Bayern Munich won the league on the last day was very tense. That was a big moment for it. And Leicester collapsing and dropping out of the top two in sort of March time was pretty stressful.
I didn't think Leicester would win the league in the end, I have to say. That was a comeback that you really needed, and I was surprised it came.
But yeah, shouts out to Sporting in Portugal. Shouts out to Inter. Shouts out to Leicester City. Shouts out to PSG, to PSV, to Real Madrid, and to Bayer Leverkusen for keeping the bag intact. Seven leagues, all won, done and dusted. Premier League didn't go in the bag this year. I did get a couple of questions about this on Twitter, and I was like, I wasn't sure, and I liked to make them early, and I didn't feel comfortable. And no, to be honest, even that's a justified decision at this point, because it feels like it is going down to the wire.
I called it in August, Man City.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see if you're right or not. Look, I've got something quite interesting for you as well on this one, in that on Wednesday, so, you know, the day that this podcast comes out, there's normally, you know, especially at this stage of the competition, Tuesdays and Wednesdays, UEFA tend to keep pretty sacrosanct, right? For the Champions League. But on Wednesday, there's Europa Conference League semi-final second leg between Club Brugge and Fiorentina. And yes, we've seen games moved in the Europa League and the Conference League before, especially when there's two teams in the same city. Lazio, Roma spring to mind as one of them having to play on the Wednesday because they're trying to avoid fan trouble in the city. Makes sense. But the reason for this is unlike anything else I think I've ever heard in football. And the reason is Thursday, May the 9th, where the game was supposed to be played, is a really special day in the Belgian religious calendar, especially in Bruges, where there's a Catholic festival. The Feast of the Assumption is marked with a procession through the city streets. There's an event known as the Procession of the Holy Blood. It dates back to the Middle Ages. Like 3,000 people take part in this walk through the streets. The priests carry a relic, which is supposed to have the blood of Jesus on it. It's a cloth, and it's been done for hundreds and hundreds of years in the city. It's known in Dutch as the most beautiful day in Bruges. I believe it also celebrates the emancipation of the city from French forces as well by locals. And the whole thing is included in the UNESCO list of intangible cultural heritage of humanity. That's pretty wild, isn't it? As a statement, it's protected by statutes and governing bodies and the like. And so, not to interfere with it, UEFA decided to move the game to Wednesday. at quarter to six in UK. I don't think I've ever heard a game moved for a reason like this before. That is wild.
It is wild, yeah. Fair play. They've got their priorities. They know what they need to do. And then that the football match needed a clear day. So they've got it.
Also, like as the procession goes past, everyone is, you know, everyone falls silent in reverence. And, you know, you can imagine just in the background hearing like a load of Fiorentina fans like having it off in a bar somewhere and just really ruining the vibe of the procession.
Yeah, certainly the potential to not respect the local culture. There's definitely the chance of that. Does that make it easier for you to watch or harder?
Makes it easier. It means there's only three games.
Oh, yeah, it doesn't clash with the Champions League. It's actually on earlier.
So, it's actually worked out quite nicely for me. But it just thought it was a different one to have a look at.
Some people listening to this right now might not have known this, and the game's probably kicking off about now for them.
Yeah. It could be.
Whack it on, people.
12:45 on the East Coast in America. 9:45 on the West Coast. Yeah, early kickoff for those of. Both of our listeners in the States. So,
Club Brugge are worth a watch, aren't they?
They are worth a watch. They're an interesting team. And Fiorentina are always worth a watch. They're always entertaining. Bonus football you get on a Wednesday. And what a reason to have it. That's it. That's all I had. I just thought it was an interesting thing. And one of those things we can talk about. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, on that note, I think we should probably move on to our European team of the season. We'll be back after the break to get stuck into the meat and bones and trying to work out exactly who deserves to be in that 11. Don't go anywhere.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John Lefoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Save big money on everything for your next project. Now at Menards. Spring is here, meaning time for outdoor projects. Cabot Australian Timber Oil is perfect for decks, siding, and outdoor furniture while providing maximum penetration, durability, and water repellency. Save big money on Cabot exterior stains to get your staining project started today. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome back to the Ranks FC European Team of the Season show. It's me opening things. It's Dean. Because it's all about Jack today. It's all about Jack. The European guru is going to give us his own wisdom on who the best 11 players have been from continental Europe. Jack, this was a tough task for you. I have jotted down suggestions of players that I feel we're definitely deserving of this. There's some massive decisions, even in my world, my level of watching the game, that are going to be tough. But I know that you'd have been inside your own head, complicating things because you're considering players from teams that I wouldn't have even considered for these positions. So I wish you all the best, friend, and you're half hour of 35 minutes starts here.
Yeah, get the clock on, we're going. So I spent a long time trying to work out a formation to begin with. And, you know, we said it on last week's show that I kind of want this team to function. As you see some teams of the year and you're like, well, that's three centre forwards playing in a front three, that isn't going to work. And So I want this team to be one that would actually function, at least on paper, if not in the real world. So I've decided and settled on a 4-3-1-2 formation. Two centre forwards, and like an attacking midfielder playing in the 10, three midfielders behind them, one who sits deepest, and four across the back, which allows you to play slightly more aggressive right and left backs, which is going to be important in this team, considering some of the performances we've seen this season. So I'll start in goal. And in goal, I have plumped for Jan Sommer at Inter Milan. Now, Inter have conceded 19 goals in 35 games. They have a possibility of breaking Juventus's record for the stingiest season in Serie A history. They conceded 20. I think this happened twice. They're also Inter one away from the record of 21 games with a clean sheet in history. Sommer's been a huge part of that. He's on course to win the European Golden Glove. But I think more than that, this needs a little bit of consideration of the context. Last year, Andre Onana, who obviously moved to Manchester United, and that hasn't gone as well as planned, and that's fine. But last year was goalkeeper of the season, undoubtedly, in the Champions League. And I think generally across Europe was absolutely brilliant, you know, as a stopper. And they sold him for big money. Now, Inter haven't had the funds to reinvest in the same kind of elements. And so they brought in a veteran in Jan Sommer, who'd been on loan at Bayern Munich from Borussia Mönchengladbach, whilst Manuel Neuer was injured in that skiing accident. And he'd done well for Bayern without, I think, setting the place on fire. I think Sommer is one of those keepers that has been maybe underrated throughout his whole career, but has generally been pretty solid. I thought he was excellent for Gladbach for so many different years. And I was glad he got a shot at a big, big club in Bayern Munich. Obviously, Gladbach are a big club in themselves, but not challenging at the top for top honours. And he came to Inter, I think, as a kind of, ooh, this is a tricky man to replace in Onana, because not only was he a brilliant shot stopper, but also his distribution and the way that he played was such a massive factor for how Inter got to the Champions League final last year for some of their best performances. And Sommer has come in here and he's been solid as. And I think that when you put the context of him coming in under not necessarily a cloud, but I think they're a bit of a question mark, bringing in a veteran, people were unsure if he was going to be able to live up to those expectations. What he's delivered this season from an Inter perspective, and you know how good they've been defensively, has really been in large part, I think, down to Jan Sommer and the calmness he personifies, the ability he has to just make sure everyone feels comfortable in front of him. He is good with his feet. He's not as good as Onana with his feet, but he's good with his feet. And he's been able to slot into this side absolutely seamlessly and turn them from a team that were excellent last year in the Champions League and the Cups into a team that have gone on and won the title again. It was the big question mark over Inzaghi, whether he could turn it around and go from a brilliant cup manager to someone who could deliver a Serie A title. And he's done that in some style. Sommer's been a huge part.
Look, there's so much to be said for experience, especially when it comes to replacing people at the back. And I sometimes just think people overthink stuff. I mean, you look at Man United and they really prioritise a goalkeeper that was good with his feet, right? It would have been Andy if Onana had been better with his hands this season, because many times Man United have needed him to dig him out. Look, he's done it at times, but he's obviously had howlers too. He's just conceded four goals against Crystal Palace, which is not totally his fault, but he's not absolved of all blame. But if you're into Milan, you're thinking, blimey, we moved him on for all that money. He's gone on to this big transfer. The guys over at Man United are probably thinking they've actually downgraded here, because where they were with David De Gea to where they are now with Andre Onana has actually dropped off. And we've replaced Onana with a guy that wasn't as coveted around Europe, wasn't as much.
It was 6.75 million euro.
Yeah,
made 45 million odd profit on Onana and brought in Sommer, and they've got
just a really good goalkeeper. And yeah, I sometimes just think that the teams do overthink stuff, and maybe it's helped Inter that they couldn't push the boat out in terms of signing a goalkeeper because it's often unnecessary. And this is a prime example. I didn't realise that he was actually on for the European Golden Glove. I mean, that's astounding.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's been an absolutely incredible season. A couple of other shout-outs. Lukas Radetzky at Bayer Leverkusen has obviously been excellent. Gregor Kobel, I think, has dug Borussia Dortmund out in a lot of moments.
Yeah, I think that's a good year.
Although I think his performances in the Champions League have been even better than the ones in the Bundesliga, although he's had really good moments there. And also Marcin Bulka. Do you remember him? He was at Chelsea for ages. He went to PSG on loan. He's at Nice now. And Nice have been absolutely excellent in terms of a defensive record. We were talking about them at the start of the season being like, how have they conceded this few goals? It's truly remarkable. Bulka's been really, really important to that Nice side. So shouts out to him. And Walter Benitez at PSV done a very, very good job as well.
Very good. Interesting. Yeah, there's no... Usually you'd have like Real Madrid, Barcelona, PSG.
I think Andre Lunin's done a really good job deputising at Real Madrid. Like, but equally, I think that, you know, that this is a season where he's not going to be like, oh, I'm keeping my shirt after
this year. No, he's
already gone. So it does feel a bit like, when you're looking at it that way, that some of these big guns have really struggled. You're struggling to pick players from Barcelona. We spoke about, you know, Marc-Andre ter Stegen in the post box on Monday and said some Barcelona fans were blaming him for the defeat against Girona, which I thought was incredibly unfair. Made some really important saves and actually kept the score down at times. But I don't think it would be... I think it's disingenuous to put any of those in. I think it's been Yann Sommer, and it feels almost like a lock, really.
Yeah. Very good, mate. I'll take you on to right back, where I'm going to assume Frimpong and Dumfries come into the conversation, but I'll let you take it from there and tell me if I've got that wrong or if I've missed anyone.
No, I didn't hugely have Dumfries in the conversation. I think he's been in and out of the team this year. It's been interesting to see Damian playing, you know, in those spots and sort of alternating between the centre-back spots and the right wing-back slot. The alternatives I had, or the honourable mentions, if you will, Jan Couto at Girona, who's been absolutely exceptional going forward, especially, and really has helped them to become the side that they are, to guarantee that Champions League spot, to look like they're on course to finish second. And Achraf Hakimi, who has been injured for parts of this season, but I do think that he has had a good year for PSG, and a year that's maybe looks like it could be turning into, like, they're playing tonight in the Champions League, it could be out by the time you listen to this, but could be turning into something quite special, I think. And that kind of turnover, he's been very important. But Jeremy Frimpong, it feels a little bit like cheating, putting the Leverkusen, you know, fullbacks in at right back and left back rather than like right wing back and left wing back. But he scored 14 and assisted 12 in his 43 appearances this season. He has been so crucial to the way that Xabi Alonso wants to play. And the ability he has to terrify teams when he starts moving forward is almost unmatched. And to be honest, I think you could wrap the left back conversation in here too, because Alejandro Grimaldo is going to be the left back in this team of the season as well. He's played 46, scored 11 and assisted 18. I don't think we've seen numbers like this from fullbacks. I mean, you could look at the Trent and Andy Robertson season. Even they didn't have numbers anywhere near this in terms of the goals that were being scored on top of the assists. And what they have brought to the table on the both sides of this defense or in these wing-back slots has been truly remarkable. Now, we're going to have to try and balance the team out a little bit, which will come a little bit later, and that will allow these two to get forward. But I think it's disingenuous not to put them. There's a shout for Bradley Locker at Brest, who's been absolutely unbelievable. Fede DiMarco at Inter has had a really, really good season. And that story of him as a fan, you know, basically being on the curve as a youngster and going on to be a key part of this Inter team, it is a remarkable one. And Miguel Gutierrez at Girona has been excellent as well. But I think Grimaldo and Frimpong have set a new standard here for how good attacking full/wingbacks can be in a team and what they can bring to the table.
Yeah, the Dumfries one is fair. Like, you've made it valuable. DiMarco, I find a little harder to accept. I know Grimaldo has had an outstanding season, but DiMarco, I think he's my favourite left back in European football.
Yeah, I mean, you were saying that about Teo Hernandez a couple of years back. But I just think that what these two have done, we talked about last week, we talked about Saliba and Gabriel as a pair. I think that when you look at Frimpong and Grimaldo, what they brought to the table, the way that they balance each other out as well, and the way that they read the game in order for one to sometimes drop back in and make sure that they're not oversubscribed in the attack, what they've done as a pairing, the ability to create from both sides, the ability to score from both sides.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's matched that. I love DeMarco too. I really do. I think he's excellent, but I don't think he's had a season like Ronaldo. And I don't think that anyone's had a season like Jeremy Frimpong. And so they're going in.
Yeah, interesting to see what happens with Frimpong in particular. I don't think there's many Bayer Leverkusen players that will end up leaving that team in the next year, but Frimpong, I get the feeling he might.
He's just he feels like so specialised at this point that, you know, is anyone else going to be able to... I mean, look, Inter, he would fit like a glove, right? That's one that you could go, okay, is that a move that you could look at? But have Inter got the money to buy Jeremy Frimpong? Probably not. And so it then becomes which system does he fit in that allows him to do what he's doing for this Leverkusen side? And I don't think the answer is many.
No, certainly not Man United, who keep getting linked with him. So what about your centre-back pairing, mate? Are we looking at an Arsenal situation from last week, or have we got a different combination from different teams?
No, I've got two different teams here. I've gone for Dali Blind at Girona on the left-hand side and Antonio Rudiger from Real Madrid. And
okay, good.
Part of this is that, you know, that there are some real brilliant alternatives. Francesco Acerbi at Inter has been absolutely excellent. Jonathan Tah at Leverkusen has been very good. Valdemar Anton at Stuttgart has played his way into the Germany setup. He has been an absolute revelation this season for that Stuttgart side. I've been really, really impressed with him. Wilfried Tsinga at Monaco. Bremer at Juventus. Juve have not been fun to watch this year, but defensively, they've been pretty solid. They're just not entertaining. Alessandro Buongiorno at Torino, as again, another one who's really risen up the ranks and looks like he's going to be in that, you know, Italy squad for the Euros. A really, really talented footballer there. And Riccardo Calafiori, who's moved into centre-back at Bologna from a left-back kind of upbringing, if you will, and been phenomenal for them. But I think when you put in the context, especially with Rudiger, you look at the players that Real Madrid have had injured this season. So obviously Courtois, we've already discussed. But then Alaba goes down with a season-ending injury and Militao goes down with a season-ending injury. They're Rudiger's two partners, really, who you've sort of rotated in and been first-choice partners for him. And the goalkeeper, who has been a key part of putting that core together, also injured. And Rudiger has just been there rock-solid through the entire season. And when you consider that Real Madrid's defensive record is so much better than everybody else's in La Liga, I think it's 10 clear of Athletic Club, who've also had a very, very good season defensively. And you look at who the kind of rock of that team is defensively, it comes back to Rudiger. He's played with Nacho, who is still a good player, but is not, you know, the force that he once was. He's played with Aurelien Tchouameni, who has spent a lot of the season playing at centre-back instead of his normal defensive midfield position. He's played with Carvajal at centre-back at times. There have been so many different partners and ways that Carlo has basically dealt with this. And the constant in there has been Antonio Rudiger. And what Real Madrid have put together with him there has been defensively so impressive. You look back at that Manchester City performance in the Champions League, where they just defended for their lives for long periods of the game and eventually, you know, got the goals that they needed and it kind of played out in their favour. But that defensive performance against a City side with this quality in attack is just something else. And I think that when you see Rudiger talking about Haaland, you see him talking about Kane, and he's just like, I love it. I love it. These are the things I want to do. I want to test myself against the very best, these best players in the world. And he's been phenomenal again. And I think that, especially in the context of Real Madrid's season defensively and with those injuries, what he's put together is remarkable.
No, I 100% agree. I had Rudiger in the list that I'd penciled down. I think you had all the other ones. Do you have Antonio Silva in there? I don't know if you mentioned him.
I didn't. But I think Sebi Coates could probably be discussed as well. Both have had very good seasons, but I don't think they're quite on this level.
So why Blind? Like, obviously, like, Blind is a... How old is Blind? 34? Got to be. He's got to be 33, 34 at this stage of his career. Look, he's at a club in Girona that have obviously had an unbelievable season. He's just played 90 minutes against Barcelona at the weekend and played his part in a win over them that's given Real Madrid and Antonio Rudiger La Liga title. And I'm just looking through right now at how many games he's actually missed this season. So I thought it would be more. I was like, has Daley Blind actually managed to get through an entire season at this stage? And he has. He missed three games in the middle of the season around October time. But they were that's the only break he's had. And yeah, I mean, that's really impressive for him to even got out there that many times, but to have been part of a team that has obviously surprised everyone by being at the top end of La Liga for the entire season. Is it his experience that's told through? Is it his positioning? Is it that he's got guru wisdom? What is it about him?
I think there's so many different things going on here, right? So Daley Blind obviously left Ajax for Manchester United. It was pretty good, but didn't set the world on fire. Went back to Ajax, thought he was going to finish his career at Ajax, and then was basically let go by the club, and it was all very ugly. He went to Bayern Munich and didn't play all that much, wasn't very good. And there was all of this happening, and it was almost a bit like, oh, is this it? Have we seen the end of Daley Blind? Is he off now? Is the kind of storyline over? And then you kind of get to this point where he had, you know, a heart attack in 2019, and he's been talking about this in interviews about the fact that, you know, doctors were saying, I couldn't get enough oxygen to my body, and that's why it was kind of stressing. And he joins this Girona side, which is built of a lot of different youngsters in various positions, right? I spoke about Jan Couto, I spoke about Miguel Gutierrez. And I think that he's been that experienced head. You mentioned it when you were talking about Jan Sommer. But what he's kind of put together since joining them and being that experienced head, the guiding light in this back line, he's been, I think, a bit of a coach on the pitch. When that's kind of happened and when things have gone their way, he's the man that spends to G them up and get things going again. And just being able to put this level of performance in time and time again across the course of this season, you know, to help Girona to lead the league at Christmas and end up securing their first ever Champions League place in the club's history. From this kind of place of everyone was like, why is that the end? Have we seen, you know, the kind of denouement of Daley Blind? Is his career going to come to this quiet close where no one really wants him? To being the stalwart defensive leader in a team that has surprised everyone, has been the Leicester City package, if you will, of this season's La Liga, is a turnaround for the ages. And I think that seeing his composure this season, seeing his ability to turn things around and build again. He plays a lot of time, you know, covering in different areas because of the way that this Girona side set up. He's so adept at reading the game at this point in his career. And, you know, you see what it means to him. You know, see the interviews after that win over Barcelona and Champions League football being secured and the emotion around it. It just felt really, really impressive. And I think that considering where he was at the start of this year, to have put in a season like this is almost unprecedented.
Yep, fair enough, mate. So we've got a goalkeeper from Serie A, we've got fullbacks from the Bundesliga, and we've got centre-backs from La Liga. Where are we going in the midfield?
Well, so there's three players in the midfield. I'm going to go with a sort of defensive midfielder and two centre midfielders, if you will, in a kind of three. The defensive midfielder, I'm going for Hakan Çalhanoğlu, who, you know, when he moved to this Inter side, he basically came out and was like, I could be the best defensive midfielder in the world. And everyone was like, sorry, what? And, you know, he was at that point seen as a sort of number 10, maybe an 8 if you push. But very much an attacking player. And he was like, no, I think I could do it. I think I could be that guy. And Brozovic obviously left. And Çalhanoğlu has completely and utterly reinvented himself as, you know, a number 6. And what you see from him now is he's doing these interviews. Like, I told you I could become the best number 6 in the world. And I've just done it. And I'm like, well, okay, maybe we have to discount Rodri. But apart from Rodri, I don't think there's many who can hold a candle to what Çalhanoğlu has done in this Inter side. He is a metronome for this team. The way that they switch play and the way that they flick things around all goes through Çalhanoğlu at the base. He allows players like Barella to go on and get into attacking situations to be able to control the game higher up. He allows Mkhitaryan to basically do a little bit less defensive work and actually that ability to get stuck in. He's also scored 15 times from defensive midfield. Right, yes, he takes penalties and occasionally free kicks. But that's a very, very good number to be putting up from these kind of positions. And without him, I don't think Inter tick. And this is, you know, one of the most dominant Inter sides we've seen in a long, long time. So Çalhanoğlu in there as the defensive midfielder. A couple of alternatives. Tchouameni, although as mentioned, he's played actually a lot of this season in a centre back. He's done very well, but equally, I felt that was a bit too much of a push. Martin Zubimendi, who's had a really, really good campaign at Real Sociedad, even in a difficult year for them. Mats Wiefer at PSV, I've been really, really impressed with. Morten Hjulmand at Sporting and João Neves at Benfica, who I just think is my favourite player in the world.
Yeah, Granit Xhaka too, I guess.
I've got him in an honourable mention in the centre midfield.
I'm going to say, I wasn't sure whether you would just not have mentioned him yet or if he would come into the rest of the conversation. I'll let you carry on, mate, before I mention any other names.
Yeah, and so my two centre midfielders are Jude Bellingham at Real Madrid and 10 coat miners at Atalanta.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
Yeah, I mean, look, Bellingham played 38, scored 22, assisted 10. I mean, those numbers speak for themselves, right? And what Bellingham has put together in this team, the different positions he has played, the versatility, the productivity, all of it has been truly just remarkable. And I think to come in there and take that number five shirt and put in a season like he has done at this age is unheard of, isn't it? I mean, what Bellingham has done there and what he has become to Real Madrid over the course of this season, to come in and become the poster boy, the poster child of this Real Madrid side, when there's so much talent there and so much quality around him, and to have stepped up into different roles where there wasn't maybe as much quality and talent, to have basically played as a false nine at points this season, all of it has just been incredible. But I still think his best work comes from a slightly deeper position. I think it comes when he's allowed to get around the pitch. I think it comes when he's allowed to snap into challenges, and just the all-round ability that Jude Bellingham possesses. I mean, there's almost no words to describe it. It's incredible. And Cote Miners played 45, scored 15, assisted 6. He's been the top scorer for Atalanta and in Serie A. They've just pushed into the Champions League places after a win against Salernitana on Monday night, in which 10 Cote Miners scored the winner from about 35 yards. And his ability to, on dead balls and set pieces is one thing, but the way that he makes the side tick. And Cote Miners, in a year where Atalanta have really grown into it, who are, I think, still on course to maybe reach the Europa League final. I think they're probably favourites in that tie with Marseille. He is just so important to everything this team does. And again, you know, we talk about versatility, and there's something I kind of wanted from a midfield three if we were going to have those fullbacks bombing on. You talk about a player who was playing as a defensive midfielder when he left AZ Alkmaar, and he spent a lot of time in that team conducting from deep. He is able in this team to get forward, to burst beyond defenders, to score goals. He's able to sit in the middle and control the tempo and spray balls out wide. He's able to do a bit of everything. And I think that without him, this Atalanta side would be so far off where they currently are in a Champions League spot and in a Europa League semi-final that his inclusion, I think it will be the shock inclusion, perhaps, in this team. But I think what he's put together this year is truly remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it should be a surprise to people. He's constantly being talked about as somebody that could make a transfer. I mean, Chelsea have been linked with him. Arsenal linked with him. Juventus are obviously linked very heavily with signing 10 Cote Miners at the end of this season, and seems to be somebody that they continue to want. And you can see why every time you watch him. It feels as well, every week when I check the Who Scored, like, team of the week, I swear, like, half the time, 10 Cote Miners has actually made the lineup. Like, he's just different.
Yeah, rightly so.
And Bellingham, I mean, I guess now I'm figuring out why you've chosen the formation you have, because you've dropped Bellingham into this sort of midfield shape, whereas I might have put him in the next position forward. But I've got a feeling,
you know who's going in there.
There might be a guy, yeah, from a different league that's going into that number 10 role.
A couple of just honourable mentions for those centre midfield spots. As you mentioned, Granit Xhaka, who's had a really, really impressive year and is unlucky to miss out here, I think. He's been so crucial to the way that this Leverkusen side have set up. And it's been a remarkable story. Alex Garcia, Girona, also unlucky to miss out. I think if you're looking at a La Liga team of the year, He's very much in there with Bellingham in the midfield. He's really, really special footballer. And his story and the kind of redemption arc that he's been on is a cool one as well. Pierre-Lys Malou at Brest has run things for that side. They've been really, really impressive in the middle of the park. And, you know, for someone who was at Norwich and ended up on loan, he has become one of the best midfielders in Ligue 1. And we're seeing exactly what the talent levels that I think maybe Canaries fans expected from him when he came in. He's a really, really good footballer, Lys Malou, and he's been very impressive. Vitinha has as well for PSG. Barella, as mentioned in the Çalhanoğlu segment. And then Joey Veerman, who's had a phenomenal season at PSV. And the man who actually beat Teyhan Koopmeiners to the Midfielder of the Year title in Italy was Lewis Ferguson at Bologna. He's been excellent as well. But I just think in terms of what Koopmeiners has produced for this Atalanta side and where they are, he's potentially more crucial as an individual, whereas Bologna feel a bit more like a team of sort of the team is more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah, Veerman and Ferguson, definitely good additions there. And I'm glad you pointed those out. Okay, mate, I'm ready for it. Hit me with your number 10.
Oh, it's Florian Wirtz.
Yeah, I thought it was. My biggest thing coming into this conversation was, how is he getting around the fact that Bellingham and Wirtz are like so similar in where they're going to try to play in a team like this? And now I get it, mate.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those where I was looking at the wingers and I spent a lot of time sort of planning out every position. And I was looking at the wingers and I was like, I'm not overly impressed with loads of them. And maybe the key here is to allow the fullbacks to bomb on and keep things narrow in the middle. And it allows you to pick a lot of very, very talented centre midfielders as well. So that's what I went with. Florian Wirtz played 45, scored 18, assisted 19. But more than that, he's the lightning rod of this Bayer Leverkusen side. Everything goes through Florian Wirtz. He is an incredibly, incredibly special footballer. And what he produces in terms of cutting teams apart, in terms of playing that final pass, playing the pass before the pass, splitting defenses open with clever footwork, scoring goals. Some of the finishes he's produced this season have been just otherworldly at times. And just the way that he attracts attention and is still able to slip away from it and make it work and make this entire side tick. He is so, so special. And if Germany win the Euros, Florian Wirtz should win the Ballon d'Or.
Should, but will he? I mean, honestly, I feel like Florian Wirtz is still underappreciated. And it's because not enough people actually know about him yet. Which is weird, seeing as Bayer Leverkusen are Bundesliga champions for this season and are still in Europe. And he's been pulling the strings all the time. He's 21 years old.
He turned 21 at the start of the month, Dean. He turned 21 last week.
But this is
absolutely, like, it is outrageous what he's doing at this age. And look, same for Bellingham. And I'm not trying to, you know, compare them.
No, but I think Bellingham's like had the praise from day one of going into Real Madrid. Like all we've talked about is Jude Bellingham. And I feel like Wirtz has got maybe 20-25% of the adulation when his season has been equally as good.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been as impressive a campaign, I think. And obviously you don't have the going into a new club and going into a club with the pressure and demand of Real Madrid. So that deserves credit in itself. And Bellingham should take all the praise for that, because to go in there and do it on that stage when that shirt hangs so heavy on so many different people is incredible. But what Wirtz has done, with half the adulation, I think, is just as impressive. And what he's, you know, this is coming back from a major injury as well, right? And people forget this. Florian Wirtz broke through very young and he did his ACL about 15 months ago and missed the entire rest of the season and came back in January 2023. Oh, so it was, sorry, 2 years ago. Mm. And he only came back into this side in January of last year. He immediately hit the ground running. And what he's brought to the table this year under Xabi Alonso is stunning. And there was no way he wasn't going in his team. Like, I was finding a way to get Florian Wirtz in whatever happened. I think he is just special.
Yeah, okay. So from what I can figure out so far from this thing that the way that you've set up, is that Nico Williams isn't going to make it because he doesn't fit one of these two forward positions. So I feel sorry for him. But still, I'm like, okay, so not named in this team. are Harry Kane, Vinicius Jr., Griezmann, Dovbik, Girassi, Boniface, Mbappe. How on earth are you deciding these final two spots?
It's fun because only one of those people you've named is in it. Just before we move on, I just want to give a shout out to Isco, who has been incredible for Betis. And another one who could have gone into that slot if Wirtz hadn't been just so brilliant. Griezmann could have probably played in this attacking midfield slot as well. Jamal Musiala's had a very good campaign. Xavi Simons has been incredible for Leipzig. And Albert Gudmundsson, who I spoke about on an episode a couple of weeks ago, as my kind of breakout star of Serie A at Genoa, also a really good campaign. But Florian Wirtz, I'm afraid, trumped them all by some distance. So I've gone for two strikers. And up top, I have gone for Harry Kane at Bayern Munich. And I've paired him with Victor Gyökeres at Sporting.
Okay.
Kane has played 44, scored 44, assisted 11. Gyökeres has played 47, scored 41, assisted 15. So their numbers in terms of goal and assist contributions are very, very similar. I think Gyökeres has one more combined goal and assist for three more games. So we're talking about very similar numbers. So that means that Dovbik at Girona, who is La Liga's top scorer, Girassi, who's had an incredible campaign, Dennis Undav, who's quietly had a brilliant campaign next to him and in Girassi's stead at times, also worth a shout. Jonathan David at Lille's not there. Vinicius Jr.'s missed out. Kylian Mbappe's missed out. Iñaki Williams, who I think has been excellent for Athletic, misses out. Lois Openda, I think, is third in the European Golden Boot race. He misses out. He's had a great campaign for Leipzig quietly. And Josh Zirkzee at Bologna and Luke de Jong at PSV, both really, really impressive campaigns as well. But I mean, look, Harry Kane has delivered for Bayern Munich, even when Bayern Munich haven't delivered for him.
He's done all he could.
He's done everything that he possibly could. He has come in there and broken records and done a bit of everything. And those 11 assists, I think, are really, really impressive as well, you know, because he has not just been Harry Kane getting the ball in the box and scoring goals. He has become the kind of heart and linchpin of the way that this attack functions. And the fact that he might well not win anything this season shouldn't take away, as much as it is quite funny on a kind of meme level, shouldn't take away from the fact that he has had an incredible campaign on an individual level. And he has been so consistent and so brilliant for Bayern Munich. And look, it was a big transfer. And at that age, that's a big risk, spending that kind of money. And already you're thinking, well, that's fine. Doesn't matter. No bother at all. We talked about Declan Rice last week, and right, that kind of money that was spent on Declan Rice by Arsenal. And you were saying, well, it already looks like a bargain. I think Kane's the same, right? You're looking at someone who, you know, that kind of money hasn't really been spent in the Bundesliga for some time. And it took a big kind of, wow, that is a huge deal for Bayern Munich. And they've gone and done it. And
you can always trust English talent, can't you, Jack?
Well, you can trust in this regard. I think it's probably a safe one to back. But Gyökeres as well, you know, we were talking about this, 20 million last summer from Coventry. Sporting were the ones that took a gamble. A lot of Premier League clubs were interested and thought that price was too high. And he's been, what, dead eye in front of goal, but also he has been everything to this Sporting side. And he has lifted them back to the league title at the weekend. He has really, really impressed in his first season. And now there is talk of Victor Gyökeres being a £100 million player. And to go from teams being unwilling to pay 20 million for you to teams being considering paying 100 million for you in a season, I think means that you have to be included. And look, the goals between these two are remarkable. The other person that probably should be shouted out here is the Capocannonieri winner, Lautaro Martinez, who's been instrumental for Inter in the way that they but I just don't think that anyone holds a candle to what these two have done for their teams and what they have brought to the table this season in front of goal. And as a strike partnership, wow, this would be scary.
Yeah, it'd be a good one. Obviously, Ruben Amorim is going to be staying now at Sporting for next season. And I assume that Gyökeres stays too for that next season.
I don't think anyone will actually pay 100 million. And I probably think they're right. I don't think he's a £100 million player, but I think he is probably an £80 million player at this point. And that is a lot. And from where he was to where he is now, to have hit the ground running that hard and just been locked in from day one, it's been an incredible campaign.
If Amorim had gone to Liverpool or had gone to Chelsea, I do wonder a bit more whether his advice on the transfer to take Gyökeres with him might have worked and might have made it a bit more tempting. But yeah, I think he probably sees it out now. I still think he'll make a big transfer further down the line if he can carry on anything like this sort of form. But it's an incredible rise for him. And that's a nice lineup, mate. So I'll read it out. You've got Sommer in goal, Frimpong at right back, Rudiger and Blind in the middle, Grimaldo at left back. You've got Çalhanoğlu at the base of the midfield with Koopmeiners and Bellingham ahead of him. And then Wirtz ahead of those. And he backs up Harry Kane and Gyökeres in attack. You've got three players from Serie A, four from the Bundesliga, three from La Liga, and one from Liga NOS. Lovely stuff, mate. That is, you've done well there, I have to say. I'm pretty impressed with this.
I was expecting more kickback, I'll be honest. I thought that there would be more.
There's not a lot, mate. I mean, I was jotting down a team earlier on. Let me just have a look quickly over a list of names I had in terms of who had done well stats-wise and in terms of rating. So in Griezmann, I have to say, actually, Griezmann is the one I thought that you would find a way to get in, because
you know how much I love Antoine Griezmann.
Yeah, exactly.
Just don't think he stands up to these front three in terms of what he's delivered. And also, I think in real terms, it's probably been a slightly disappointing campaign for Atleti.
Look, when it comes to ratings, so who scored obviously have a rating system that they use across a season. And Griezmann is the top rated player from Europe this season, ahead of Jude Bellingham and Phil Foden. So that's how good a season he's actually had. In terms of other surprises, in terms of their ratings and players that you haven't mentioned at all, Mikel Merino at Real Sociedad.
Great footballer. Although I don't think he's had as good a campaign as Martin Zubimendi, and he also missed out. So
he also missed out, exactly. Joao Cancelo comes high up in this rating.
I mean, that's very much the eye test not backing up the stats. Joao Cancelo, a lot of Barcelona fans don't want to sign. Defensive liability. And hasn't delivered on in the big moments, I don't think, for Barcelona. I think that's one where I saw a bit of this. He had a really good period of the season between like November and February. But I think that what we've seen from him since then and the way he got torched in both the Clásico and the game where they were knocked out of the Champions League, I can't justify it. I don't think he's been that impressive. And I honestly think that if you were to give, you know, if next season, as soon as Alex Balde's back, I think he takes his spot back.
Yeah, it's fair enough. And the other player, it's a Porto player that I thought you might have given a shout out, midfielder. Galeno.
Galeno. I mean, Galeno's great, but Porto are having a kind of dreadful campaign. Galeno was excellent in the Champions League. And
I think that's obviously where this rating comes from. Yeah.
But I do think that kind of generally when you're looking at it and you think, well, where is he?
I just know that you love him, mate. So that's why I thought you'd mention him.
I do love him. But Porto are on the verge of falling out of the Champions League spots in the Primeira. And I am loath to give them credit, apart from the fact that they put in André Villas-Boas as the new president. And I'm excited to see what he can do with the club from a kind of higher level perspective.
Very good, mate. You've done fantastic there. Take a deep breath. But I must warn you, the focus is back on you after the break.
Oh, no. Right. We're back with some guru wisdom. Don't go anywhere.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on.
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot!
And he stole our crunch!
Quick, the zip line!
He's getting away!
Throw our last crunch berry!
No!
No one steals my crunch berries!
I think you mean my crunch berries? Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch!
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway. and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for our third and final segment. Take it away, boys.
Guru wisdom, guru wisdom, guru wisdom.
Now, the reason I'm the guru, the reason I'm wise is because I'm basically getting old. I don't usually feel old. I don't look particularly old. I've still got my hair. I've got too many greys coming through or anything like that, Jack. I'm doing okay.
You're a very physically. You're very youthful man.
Thank you, mate. But I have to say, mate, I did feel old for the first time this week. And it happened on Monday. I was collating the questions from our patrons. And I was going through them all and it was all fine. Except everybody was asking about something that I knew nothing about. Everyone was asking for our thoughts about Drake versus Kendrick. How it was the big talking point in the moment. I knew literally nothing about this. I did not know what they were talking about. I hadn't heard the songs. I didn't know why these two were going at each other. I need to wise up, Jack, before I go out of date. So, how have I missed this? I don't know. Maybe I'm busy getting ready for the transfer season. Maybe it's because I've got kids and it's been the Easter holidays and stuff like that. Maybe it's because I'm busy looking at videos of birds' nests or something in my spare time. I don't know exactly how I've managed to miss this massive moment in popular culture, but I have. And Jack, as the more youthful one of us, it's your job now. Tell me whose side you're on and provide me with some wisdom around this situation.
Well, I spoke about this on Monday's postbox when you were gone. I basically did an ending segment where I talked about this, and I find it really interesting. And I do like these kind of beefs, if you will, these kickoffs that happen, especially in the rap world. And I spent a lot of time when I was younger watching the kind of grime ones and all of that kind of battle rap scene that kind of erupted for a while in the UK. But this one feels like it's kind of superseded everything else in popular culture, if you will. But I remain very much on Kendrick Lamar's side of this. I think that Drake is a wonderful artist and I think he's done lots of very, very good things. But in terms of lyricism and in terms of the tracks that have been released in this one, it seems incredibly one-sided. And I think I wasn't sure if it was beef or bullying at this point, because it just feels like Kendrick is absolutely lobbying Drake to go quiet. And instead it's just this, he's sort of being there like, no man, it's fine. And instead you've just got Kendrick going, all right, I'll just lob another one at you. And over the weekend, this really did explode. And maybe bank holiday weekend, lots of different things going on. I can understand how you might have missed it, because there was like four songs released in the course of 3 days. It went really, really, really like nuclear all of a sudden. And yeah, I mean, look, Kendrick's just a lyrical genius, and seeing him at Glastonbury a couple of years back remains one of the sort of musical experiences of my life. He was so, so good. So you're looking at it from that kind of perspective, and I've always really, really liked his albums and what he's done. I enjoy that, you know, that this originally kind of came about from a reference to the big three, if you will, in inverted commas, which was Kendrick Lamar, J. Cole, and Drake. And Kendrick was basically like, it's just me. And then J. Cole sort of released a semi-diss track and then immediately backtracked and was like, nah, I want no part of this. I want no part of it whatsoever. And having seen what Kendrick has done to Drake in the last weekend, I love J. Cole. I'm so glad he's involved. I'm like, wow, I was always I love J. Cole. All of these three, he was the guy of the three that I really liked, and musically I think was probably most in tune with all the way back from Friday Night Lights. He's been someone that I've followed for a long, long time. But I was like, oh, okay, I don't think you want anything to do with this. And there's a UK rapper called Chip who and you might know as Chipmunk from back in the day, who was just incredibly good at dish tags. He was just so good at them. And people used to get involved in him and be like, what are you doing? Like, don't do that. Don't do that. You just don't want to go for him. And it feels a bit like that with Kendrick now. You're like, I just don't, you don't want anything to do with it. You don't want anything to do with it whatsoever. He is fundamentally winning this one, I think.
Very good, mate. No, I appreciate learning what side you're on. I assumed that was the case. I did turn to TikTok briefly for an explainer on what was going on. And very conveniently, a lady in America somewhere had done explain Drake versus Kendrick to me like I'm a baby, and was explaining it to a baby sat in a high chair. And she did like a very quick run through. Look at it if you get, if you want a, another run through. But Jack has done a very good version of it there in this podcast. Thank you, mate. I knew you would have this wisdom. I deliberately didn't listen to that part of the pod. I have listened to most of what you said on Patreon after I left on Monday, but I stopped because I knew that it was coming up, and I didn't want to have that wisdom before I started today. So thank you, mate.
There you go, mate. There we go. I wasn't expecting that one. That's come out.
I know, I did throw it on you, but I thought, seeing as it's your episode today, I might as well throw another one in.
Well, there we go. And there we have it. And I think that with that, we should probably call this a day. So all that's left for me to do is say thank you very much to Mr. Dean Jones.
Thank you, mate. I haven't really done anything today. It's been the Jack Collins Show. Thank you.
I very much enjoyed it. Thank you for listening, everybody. We really appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow or first thing Thursday morning, depending on where you are in the world, with a Champions League takeaway, looking back at these second legs of the semi-finals, discussing who's going to be in that showpiece event in London in June. It's all very exciting. But for now, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you very shortly. Take it easy, Ranks. Peace.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.